and welcome back to the Chris Yeh podcast, a special live edition. And I am joined today by the team, or at least part of the team from Immortal Studios. And we're going to be talking about Silicon Valley and Hollywood and Wuxia and building the next Marvel. I'm going to let you guys introduce yourselves. Peter, why don't you lead things off?
Sure. Thank you, Chris. Hi, everybody. My name is Peter Hsiao. I'm the founder and CEO of Immortal Studios. We're really proud to be here in Silicon Valley. And I want to thank our new friend, Chris, because when we were launching Immortal with our first initial properties, I actually became a student of Blitzscale. And we practiced a version of Blitzscale. And so to be with you here today is really, it's really amazing.
Well, I've enjoyed it very greatly. We've already, again, had a great day so far, and the day's going to continue for the rest of the trip tomorrow as well. But now let's introduce one of your key collaborators, Sam Ades. By the way, that's A-D-E-S, not 80s like the great decade, but still also awesome. Sam, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Hi. Thank you very much for having me. Again, my name is Sam Ades. Prior to working with Peter and helping hopefully architect something really new and different in this space, I was at Warner Brothers for 20 years, really at the intersection of fandom, digital, and brands, and evolving brands, and sort of the crowning achievement, both good and bad, was the design and launch and management of DC Universe, which was our really sort of differentiated fan subscription service based on the DC brand. I was the general manager of that until we closed it down because things change with big corporations.
Absolutely, but that's still an incredible track record, and you worked with some of the most valuable IPs in the world. This is the classics, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. You were doing it all.
Yeah, and prior to that, actually, I was doing something similar for kids brands with Looney Tunes, Scooby-Doo, Hanna-Barbera, and prior to that, actually working with Harry Potter. So I've been very, very fortunate to work with some pretty cool brands.
Did you manage to sneak in Star Wars and Star Trek along the way as well?
Those are the competitors, but yes, but laudable competitors.
Very cool. Well, Peter, you know, we've been talking a little bit about Immortal Studios. Why don't you relate the origin story of Immortal Studios?
Sure.
This is really a superhero origin story where you were reluctantly called to a destiny that you didn't necessarily know you were going to end up being part of.
Sure. Well, for those of you who are covering the Immortal story, you'd know that something, the words Wuxia, which in Chinese literally means the martial hero genre, is something that runs through my blood. This is a genre that I was born into by virtue of my father being one of the top creators in the genre. So Wuxia is kind of the mythology of my life that I was born into. Of course, growing up in LA and Hollywood, invariably I went from politics in the entertainment industry, but I never thought that I would work with my father. I was actually very intent on developing my own ideas, but somehow as I matured, as I grew up, a lot of my major life lessons I realized actually came from this Wuxia genre, which I started reading when I was 3 years old. And when I really finally came of age as a professional, as an entrepreneur, as I got into film financing, production, technology, I really became enamored with the idea, or I kept going back to my love of the genre and this belief that this genre is something that hasn't really seen its brightest days yet. And it just became such an important part of my life and my own personal mission. And I woke up one day as a fully grown man, and me and my dad, we looked at each other and said, this is the time to do it. So, and most recently, I think when you're really evaluating from a life purpose point of view, and I just, of all the different things that I could be going, I said, this is the one thing that Immortal Studios, that I would not be okay not doing in this lifetime. So that became very, very clear. And we launched in the middle of the pandemic. And anyways, we get a chance to talk a little bit more about where we've grown as a company, but that's my origin story. Something I was born into and then recommitted my life to.
Yeah. And again, this is something where it's a classic thing. The hero tries to refuse the call, Joseph Campbell. And yet in the end, the family legacy predominated. And this is actually the plot of many a Wuxia story, is it not?
It is. It is. Anyways, I feel incredibly gifted, and to have this opportunity that through Immortal, we could actually build a home for this 5,000 year genre that strangely does not have a home and deliver its first interconnected universe ever. And to be able to do it, to build it on my father's IP library, it now has 61 titles, and to make it interconnected and relevant for this particular moment in time, not just culturally, spiritually, but even technologically, it's amazing.
Well, you mentioned that Wuxia means sort of the martial hero, but what are some examples? Obviously, the one that springs to mind recently is Marvel released Shang-Chi. Great fanfare, yes. Made a lot of money. But what are other examples of Wuxia that are out there in popular culture already? That
people don't know Wuxia, unless if you're from the East, then you would be like, of course, it's a no-brainer. But if you're a fan of The Matrix, if you're a fan of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, if you're a fan of Kung Fu, you're a Wuxia fan. If you like Bruce Lee, you're a Wuxia fan. So there it is.
Well, that's a pretty broad fandom right there.
It is a broad fandom. In fact, it's really, it's the East's contribution to global pop culture.
Got it. Well, that's extremely cool. Now, Sam, you were the person who was responsible for basically almost all of pop culture, right? You didn't create it, but you worked with it.
I was one of many stewards, but yes, I had a great, great seat, seat at the show.
So look, we already know about Wuxia, and we love Wuxia. We think it has a lot of deep roots. It's very, very significant, but we also wanted to have we wanted to make our own playbook, because the things that we can do now that Marvel didn't have access to 50 years ago is extraordinary. And we looked at all kinds of people, and we settled on Sam Aedes as the guy we wanted to make our direct-to-consumer guru, because he's been there.
Right.
And he's been able to do it at global scale. And that was...
Well, that makes a lot of sense, because people are not as familiar with the industry. If you think about the industry, you know, Marvel is a great example. Marvel is now hailed today as the exemplar of building a cinematic universe, a shared universe that's spread out across movies, games, television shows, you name it, right? Disney has spread it everywhere. But Marvel began in its movie career really hampered. Marvel had already signed away contractually its crown jewels, its three biggest properties, X-Men, Fantastic Four, and Spider-Man, were already farmed out to other studios. So they had to rummage around in their coat closet and dig out Iron Man, which was a pretty low, you know, second tier.
A lot of people didn't hear it.
I knew about Iron Man before Iron Man came out, but, you know, Iron Man was decidedly second tier. And yet they were able to, and the Avengers, nobody really cared about the Avengers. Discount, Justice League, not interesting. And yet Disney was able to make this enormously valuable. They saw something in that backlog of IP. And Sam, you are an expert on IP, evaluating IP, figuring out what things are going to appeal to people across the globe. What did you see? How did Peter rope you into this? And what do you think this is going to turn into?
Yeah, I think there's three threads. We can sort of pull at them sort of independently. One is, and sort of it harkens back to the story that Peter was just telling. And, you know, there's a lot of content out there. There's a lot of stories out there. But, you know, and you mentioned Joseph Campbell. I think it is really imperative that, you know, underneath the individual stories, the characters, I think the IP universes, the story verses that stand the test of time, they have an evangelist at the helm. They have somebody who has a mission. They have something greater that they want to share, greater that they want to believe in. You know, whether you go back to Walt Disney and it's hearkening to this family idea, or Stan Lee, who really was, he was an iconoclast and he was a disruptor. And if you have to sort of cast yourself back into the 60s, it was a moment when, candidly, the DC characters who were, let's call it, invented in a moment where evil and civil disorder were easy to understand. It was fascists, you know, in the 40s, 30s and 40s, we had simple heroes. And those simple heroes worked for a while and then they didn't. And Stan Lee invented a whole new cast of characters, the X-Men, Spider-Man, et cetera, who were flawed and human. But also rallied when the cause needed it, when things were greater than them. And I'm not gonna put Peter too much on the spot, but Peter really does have a sense of mission behind this idea. And Immortal Studios isn't just, it is a connected story verse. It is grounded in Wuxia, but as I've been educated, Wuxia is really about hearkening to your better angels and, you know, and also tying East and West together. These two themes, especially in this moment, are incredibly important. And Peter believes in these things to his marrow. And those are the kinds of things you can't fake, you can't manufacture. And so that, from an IP perspective, I think is essential, because if that is driving, candidly, the rest can take care of itself.
I was going to say, that's one of the remarkable things. I mean, the success of Marvel really dates to the fact that they decided to actually put someone in charge who loved the comic books, right? Before, all these movies were being made by people who weren't fans of the comic books. I mean, it's almost insane. And yet that happened. And then meanwhile, with Immortal, Peter, obviously you have a deep personal connection with the material. I mean, thinking of yet another IP universe. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a role, for example, that Christopher Tolkien played in Tolkien's Legendarium. Mm-hmm. If it weren't for Christopher Tolkien carefully shepherding the Tolkien corpus through and making sure that things like the Silmarillion and all the additional content that J.R.R. Tolkien had outlined made it onto print, then the whole Tolkien world would be far poorer. And by the way, Amazon would not be about to come out with a Lord of the Rings series based around the Second Age of Middle-earth. So you are in many ways the Christopher Tolkien as well.
Yeah, and I like to think that there's some things that we could do today that they couldn't do, which is interact with fans and kind of open up the bailiwick a little bit, because the lines between creators and their audiences are totally blurred. And I think we're looking at demographics and consumers who expect so much more from the content they consume. They want to be part of it.
You know, and this is a perfect segue to the second reason that this appealed to me so greatly. And Peter and I have had many conversations about this as well, that this is a different moment. To your point, Chris, I learned a lot. I had a lot of opportunities working on the IP and candidly having an opportunity to really be the steward and the shepherd of what direct to consumer engagement meant. But there were a lot of constraints. And a lot of those constraints were this idea that, you know, we were in the ivory tower and the fans were outside. As much as we sort of tried to bridge that gap, it was not in our DNA. And building something where that is in our DNA at the outset, where, you know, I mean, again, if you look at things like Wattpad and Webtoons, if you look at the way that fan creators and the fan creator economy and the fan creator just sort of explosion, there is a expectation with audiences and even discourse and tools like that. There's an expectation of, as Peter has said, of participation, of contribution, of recognition. Those things are, there is an uneasy, let's call it tipping the toe in the water from the studios and trying to understand those things. There is an opportunity to accelerate, to disrupt, to frankly move faster, break some heads, and do things differently, because again, going back, Peter's vision and clarity of the universe is clear. Because it's so clear, it is also, it can be less protected and a little bit more open. And again, the fact that the Tolkien, the person who is the steward of Immortal Studios and this IP in the Storyverse is willing and driven to share that participation, well, then it's much easier for somebody like me who wants to build a direct-to-consumer infrastructure and tools to create something that, you know, it may be truly disruptive, because all of the intention, the moment of content development, and frankly, the tools and let's call it the zeitgeist of how fans expect to be engaged are all aligning.
Oh, and that makes a ton of sense. As a side note, a little known fact, Alan Lau of Wattpad is an earlier guest on this podcast, and that took place a number of months before the announcement of the massive acquisition of Wattpad. I think that they sold Wattpad for $600 million. Which is a remarkable example of the power of fan engagement to drive economics
And to bring it even closer, one of the co-founding members of the Wattpad team, Charlene Saiz, is a member of our digital engagement team. So
look at that.
So full circle. But
But you're going to get her a bigger exit than Alan did, right? I mean, no mere
$600 million. I want to turn it on you. So you're the Blitzscale guy. You're the evangelist for the Silicon Valley model globally. So what? And content is almost known like a bad word in the Valley here. So I'm so happy to have you, you know, being part of the Immortal family. What was it that got you interested and that really thought that this could be a place where Blitzscale can rear its head?
So this is the interesting thing. I grew up in Southern California, so I have a lot more knowledge of and interest in the entertainment industry than most people here in Silicon Valley, and proved it when I went on television on Mental Samurai. I'm answering various pop culture questions and the like. And so I've followed the story of things like the Marvel Cinematic Universe or MCU for quite some time and sort of said, okay, well, what is it that sets us apart? So the MCU obviously is the most successful movie franchise of all time. And that's saying a lot because there have been some pretty successful movie franchises over the history of this world. And what made the Marvel Cinematic Universe so powerful is essentially the fandom flywheel. And what I mean by that is this: if you think about the movie industry, typically what happens is people make movies and the movie is coming from, you know, the mind of a director and a writer, and maybe it's a hit and maybe it isn't. And as the great screenwriter William Goldman said, nobody really knows anything, right? If we knew what people were going to like, we would just make that. And we would never have a Geely or a Heaven's Gate or an Ishtar or what have you, just to name a few of the notorious bombs that have been created. And so what the MCU did is it realized, hey, wait a minute, if we create an interconnected universe where fans are fans of the universe, not just individual movies, not just individual characters, then all of a sudden we can extend the power of that fandom flywheel to any movie that takes place in that universe. And all of a sudden, a movie has a built-in audience. And so if somebody creates something like Ant-Man, I mean, let's face it, Ant-Man is insane, right? As far as superheroes go, a guy who can shrink down to the size of an ant, wears a funny helmet, and controls ants is one of the stupidest superheroes you could ever imagine. They must have been on drugs when they came up with Ant-Man. Yet Ant-Man is successful, both because it is taking place in this larger universe, and so there's all these threads that tie Ant-Man together with the Avengers and other superheroes, and therefore there's a built-in audience. But the fact that it's tied in then allows the director to experiment and really push the films in a different direction. That, I think, has been the thing that's marked the success of the MCU more recently. Experimentation along the lines of Ant-Man or along the lines of Thor Ragnarok, where a director is allowed to push things in different directions. So the back to the blitzscaling notion of it, from a blitzscaling perspective, what sets blitzscaling apart, a blitzscaling opportunity apart, is when there's a winner-take-most market. In other words, when there is a reason why scale creates competitive advantage that keeps other people from competing with you, when scale confers some sort of benefit. And in the case of a shared universe, a multiverse, a storyverse, if you will, that's that built-in fandom. And the ability to take that fandom and take them from movie to movie, from book to book, from comic to comic, and ultimately it goes across all media channels, right? That was why you created, or you were part of the creation of DC Universe, because the notion is this is not a movie thing. This is not a TV thing. Hell, how do people even know the difference when Netflix and Amazon are busy releasing movies and television, everything appears on the same screen anyways? And so once you say, okay, if we can create this universe, then we can leverage it to an almost infinite level. That's what gets me excited as a blitzscaler.
Yeah, and I think really when we happen upon our minimum viable product strategy using digital comics to get product market fit is when I became really excited.
Well, you need to explain that, right? Because I was gonna ask you and Sam, Peter, are you and Sam currently billionaires?
Not yet.
Okay. So how is it that you're going to be able to create the next Marvel? Because, you know, Marvel's pretty big. Disney's huge. You got all this competition. How are you going to be able to do it without spending $100 million?
Well, first of all, I want to say we're standing on the shoulders of giants. We don't have to recreate Wuxia. Wuxia has been around for 5,000 years. And if you look at this is the narrative. This is the Eastern mythology. So any person who comes from the East, and reminding all of our watchers, the world is 60% Asian. And Wuxia is the native genre for most of these Asians. And now with Gen Y, Gen Z being raised on anime, And these are Western kids. And with Wuxia being the real action fantasy wing of anime, you could arguably say that Wuxia has already the largest native fan base with both youth and Asians globally, which makes it prime to pop. And yep. Now that Shang-Chi has already kind of met this moment, we can honestly say that there's a lot of trend to make Wuxia the next big global storyverse. There's no one like it out there doing what we're doing. We have the original library now. Without spending $100 million, I would say actually $1 billion, we figured out a way to prototype these stories using the lean startup model, where we spend a limited amount of money. We can almost work in real time and bring that kind of content to a fan base right away. Who can vote with their wallets.
Right. So this, what you're describing is something that you sort of told me about, which is that you guys actually find the most promising stories, and then you actually run Kickstarter campaigns around the comics those stories. So you actually—
We're testing.
You can test
where people read, what do they like, what we didn't like, and we're constantly updating. So there isn't a mechanism in Hollywood right now to transfer these scripts into consumer knowledge, into useful data. So we're kind of really solving the MVP problem for Hollywood. We could do it cheaper. We can abandon these projects. We can improve them, and we can actually have live engagement and data sets. See, those are the things that will help us translate it into movies, television, games, and all the other more expensive stuff that I think we'll find a lot of cheaper capital to do once we have the product market fit. Yeah. And that's the beauty of the Immortal model. Like, we don't have to spend $1 billion on content.
That's what I think is so impressive. And the other thing is, the way I would phrase it is, you're doing market research. You're gathering data with people actually voting with their wallets, which means it's the highest signal data possible. Mm-hmm. And yet you've turned it into a profit center, right? You're actually making money off your Kickstarter campaigns.
We already have thousands of paying fans who are invested in it. And we already, through our crowdfunding model, we now have over 500 shareholders who are going to be our ambassadors to their worlds. And this is, so we're very, very new in our evolution, but that's the building block of this new fan engaged thing. We haven't even talked about NFTs, and that's for a reason, because everybody's talking about NFTs, but I believe, between the fact that we have some of the best artists working on so many different images whose rights we control, we have a completely connected universe. We already have a large fan base of collectors who are willing to pay. We do have the ability, we have a perennial universe that's already in place, which means that our NFT strategy is going to go through the roof, and I'm sharing with this crowd first that we'll be announcing a series of very, very dynamic partnerships and how we intend to compete and also excel in the whole NFT space, extending use and value and collectability to our collectors with NFTs that will morph over time. So that's as much as I'll say.
So stay tuned for more drops in the future. But Sam, you're the master of fan engagement, right? These NFTs, these Kickstarter campaigns, they're just tip of the iceberg. What's your vision for the ways that fans will be able to engage?
Yeah, we've touched on a lot of things here, and I think it's all part of the same conversation. But really, there's two things. And again, Peter's touched on them, but I'll sort of let's call it, get into some of the mechanics. We talked about the UGC trends, and we've talked about sort of that market signal of paying of voting with your wallet. That really is just the very first step of inviting this audience, these first movers, these first adopters, in as sort of the earliest members of a community, a mortal squad that are going to become a growing audience of really. It's an ongoing panel, an ever on focus group that we use not just on every content drop, but all the time to both to stress test the content, but also just this language of Wuxia, this community, to really create ever more relevant and shared language around what this fandom is. We've talked a lot about Marvel and other things. It took generations of comics and a very slow sort of, let's call it, content out to response back. This is all getting accelerated and getting to an almost real-time level through the tools that we're all familiar with. And then again, this sort of speaks to this idea of going, creating content and community at the same time. More, everything we're talking about, whether it's NFTs, whether it's discourse, whether it's Wattpad, all these things ultimately are about the fact that there are just different expectations and frankly, capabilities that audiences have now to both be part of the creation process if they're invited in. There have to be guardrails, of course, but there is a broad, vast spectrum of opportunity that is not being availed upon. Yes, people do their own UGC, but they're not invited to play with the jewels of the kingdom. That's what Peter is talking about doing. And then, you know, those people become the evangelists. We know that, but we're talking about creating a very, very different level of commitment, loyalty, and engagement.
And ownership,
absolutely. And ownership. NFT is
aligning economic interests too.
Right. Which is NFT is almost a NFT is almost sort of like a it's a pragmatic but almost like a just a tool. But what we're talking about is creating NFTs with the entire Storyverse, not necessarily NFTs, but a shared ownership, where that investment and that ownership starts while this Storyverse is evolving and building and growing, as opposed to trying to do those things after the fact, when all of those mechanisms and constituencies have been, frankly, and again, going back to my time at DC, despite best efforts, they're a little calcified. They get a little arthritic. So getting away from that and being nimble creates huge opportunities to be disruptive and to continue to be disruptive. Just as a, let's call it fundamental precept of how we approach things.
Got it. So let me see if I'm getting what you guys are all about. So from my perspective, what I'm hearing is this: you start with the foundation of Wuxia, an art form with 5,000 years of history. You have all the rights to your father's work. He was one of the five tigers of Wuxia, sort of like the Stan Lee of Wuxia.
The only Chinese American.
The only Chinese American in that bunch. He wrote 61 novels. He sold 15 million copies of those novels. They've been made into how many movies and television shows?
31.
31 movies and television shows over time. So it's proven to be appealing. But what makes it special is what Sam just said. You're able to start from scratch because of all the major Wuxia authors, your father's work is the only one where all the rights are actually concentrated in one place with one person or one company, where they're unencumbered, where you have the freedom to do with them whatever you want. You don't have one television deal, one movie deal, one publishing deal. You actually can wrap it all together in one place.
That's right.
And so when you're taking that and then you're rapid prototyping using these comic books, digital comic books, Kickstarter, you name it, to allow you to modernize and update in a very efficient
way. We're creating the IP in real time
with
customer input and ownership, co-ownership.
You know, I love the idea of that. You guys haven't even heard me suggest this. I think you might want to do something where you have some sessions where the writers and the authors are doing live streams while this is going on, right? I can imagine. Just think about the power of things like Critical Role, live streaming has been huge. If you can get people involved, that'd
be great. Sam is putting together all the benefits of being in the Immortal Order, and that's the kind of subscription.
Yeah, you've hit on, and I love this idea, and it speaks to these ideas of, again, the idea of being invited into the writer's room, into casting, when we get to, media exploitation, those kinds of things. And again, we experience this now, to your point, on Discourse or on Twitch. It's why conventions, comic convention, pop culture conventions are huge. That access is so valuable. Creating and understanding the hierarchy of value to these fans and this audience, again, deeply, innately, and through, again, rapid test and learn, is a way to, and again, continuing to evolve those benefits. It'll benefit us, it'll benefit our audiences.
All right, gentlemen, I'm going to ask you guys two quick questions before I let some of the audience members who've been very patient while I've been monopolizing the conversation ask their questions as well. And so the questions are, if somebody loves what you're doing, how do they get involved? And are you taking investment at this time?
So I'll answer the first one, and actually both of them, and Sam, you can give another crack. So the best way to do it is to join our mailing list or follow one of our social channels. So the starting place, I would say, go to our website, www.immortal-studios.com, and add yourself to the mailing list. And then, because we have lots of newsletters coming out that inform you of different product launches, etc. Because we are a crowdfunded company, we're running multiple campaigns, I would say, for people who are interested in being a shareholder. Just send us an email at contact@immortal-studios, and we'll try to figure out their larger programs and smaller programs. But we basically want people who share our values to be part of our company.
So you don't have to be some sort of multimillionaire to put money in and have an ownership stake.
Like, we receive money in from institutional sources to people giving us $100, and we love it all because it is about engagement. So
awesome. All right, so I'm going to open it up to folks, and you can put questions into the chat room, or you can use the Zoom function to raise your hand and I can call on you. You guys just do what you want to do. And if you want me to read out the question in the chat room, that's great. If you want to ask the question yourself by unmuting, that's great as well. So I'll open up the questions to the audience. You guys have been very patient. I really appreciate it.
I know you decided to get involved with us, and also mm-hmm. you've been joining us, if I don't mind saying it, as an investor. So what was it about you that moved you from
so there were several
to get involved? I mean, you're doing lots of different things with your life. So
yeah, believe me, when Peter first reached out to me, he told me what he was doing. I said, wow, that's really interesting. He said, can you be an advisor? I'm like, dear God, I don't have any time to do any of this. I don't want to get involved. Please, can I just help you a little bit? Yeah. Can I just give you some advice now and then? Peter was like, no, I want more. I want more. So as I mentioned before, I grew up in Southern California. I really have a strong affinity for the entertainment industry. And so I knew that what Immortal was working on could be enormously valuable for all the reasons we described: the IP base, the ability to rapidly prototype, the ability to really build a connected universe. All of these things were things that I could see were enormously valuable. But then on the other side, you know, there's also the cultural element of it. I am Chinese American, as some of you may be able to tell if you're looking at the video, and seeing a way of bridging the cultures of East and West, of spreading this kind of knowledge. And I think you described it as wuxia diplomacy in a world where it's desperately needed, is something where I'm like, wow, you know, this is also having a positive social impact on the world as well. And again, I've been trying to avoid any additional entanglements, any additional advisorships. But in the case of what you were doing with Immortal, you and Sam and the team, after I met them, I'm like, I have to get involved. So I see Ryan has his hand up. Ryan, why don't you go ahead and unmute and ask your question? You've been super patient.
Thanks for the presentation. My question is basically about sampling. Like, how do you get audience interest in a sample of what you're doing? Kind of like a sneak preview into what the IPO will look like once you complete your creative product. And then how do you kind of like sometimes overemphasize what audience members think, so that you don't stick with your original product? Because sometimes audience members might not see the value in what you're doing until later on, as we've seen with like Apple, right? When Steve Jobs says, hey, use hardware that looks nice, people are like, you're crazy. He's like, no, IBM hardware looks ugly, and let's make something that looks pretty. And people are like, you're stupid. So eventually his idea caught on. So how do you balance these types of things when you're creating creative content and taking audience comments, but without kind of like just forgetting about your original like thought or process? Like, how do you kind of balance those things?
Well, first of all, from a creative point of view, I don't think audience engagement is supposed to replace ingenuity or creativity or authorship. So the analogy I like is that I see that in a transmedia sense, we're creating story arcs that we believe in, we love, that we think fits into our worldview and our vision of what is essential wuxia. So first of all, we have to be fully committed and excited, and we put that through our creative partners. We're adapting that material from IP that's already worked historically. So I think we're standing on really solid ground. Against that backdrop, we want to really hear what people have to say, but we reserve the right to disagree with our audience and to push back on them. But then we also develop kind of a Swiss cheese model. Here's a slab of cheese, and of course Swiss cheeses have holes in them. We're asking our audiences to fill the holes so that at a bare minimum they're engaged, they're co-creating, But from a story point of view, it doesn't matter if your sweater is black, gray, or white, or the name of these characters, or some of their backstories. So I think we're creating a balance where audience members can reasonably fill in certain voids and that they're fully getting engagement. And now we're actively listening, but we're ultimately reserving the right to disagree with them, to surprise them and wow them, and still keep them engaged. And of course, there's different ways in the universe where they're not just being fans, but they're owners. We're already dealing with collectors, we're dealing with fellow shareholders who have so many opportunities to get involved. And of course, with our NFTs, they're going to be able to get passes and co-ownership into different virtual spaces and digital real estate. So I think between all of those things, we've built in a systematic way where different ideas and connectivities built into our ecosystem.
I want to just pause and reinforce one thing that Peter said, which is the active listening. And beyond active listening, it's a responsiveness, it's an acknowledgement, and it's a respect. Even again, to the ideas that are not taken, the inputs, the opportunity is to whether the ideas or the inputs are find their way into a story, or they just inform everybody and help to be, for lack of a better term, and maybe not the best term, but a learning moment for the broader community, right? We are creating something together, and every question is a good question, and we answer every question. It may not be the answer an individual fan is looking for.
But I think just doing all of that, because we do have corporate support, and this is not just one creator doing this, that I think that in the aggregate, our batting average is better than most creators out there. It's going to be in the aggregate, especially if you consider what things will look like after we run our model for the next three or four, you know, next 3 years.
Got it. By the way, Peter, I want you to hold up your arm and demonstrate your commitment to your company.
So this is the Immortal logo. It's the symbol of the Awakened Warrior.
Get it closer to the camera.
It is on my arm, so it's not something that I could ever walk away from, and that's.
I'm not going to say that I require entrepreneurs to tattoo their companies on their own bodies, but I have seen a large number of entrepreneurs who do that, and even employees. So not saying that you have to do that.
The reasons we've already talked about, like this is not, it's a great company, but it really comes from a very personal place. I believe in the power of Wuxia to make the world a better place by unleashing the heroes that everybody really wants to be in their heart of hearts. And this is why the genre has been around for thousands of years, because it's a human need. And I think more than ever now, this time of disempowerment and confusion as a company, if we can empower people to be the kind of people they want to be in their lives of their own choosing, that's just an incredibly exciting proposition. That's why our motto is to awaken the hero in everybody. We really mean that.
Inspiring stuff. Do you have any other questions, Ryan, or does anyone else have any other questions they want to ask Peter and Sam?
Thank you for the answer. I appreciate it.
Awesome. All right. Well, we are almost at the 40-minute mark, which is probably pretty good for a podcast. If you guys have any other questions, you may still jump in now. But other than that, Peter and Sam, I really want to thank you guys for coming on the podcast, trying out this special live experiment. Thanks to Ryan for participating as part of it. Now your voice is immortalized in the podcast feed. Hopefully you don't mind. And for everyone else who happens to be listening to this now in podcast form, as always, I want to thank you for your support and following along, and look for more Immortal Studios related content and news coming soon.
I would say one thing, Chris, if you don't mind.
Yes.
Today's what is December the 9th?
Yes.
We're doing this in Silicon Valley. And those of you who are following our story, you know that we're an LA-based company, so that it's important that we're here sharing this moment in Silicon Valley, because one of the things that we're really committed to is really bringing Hollywood and Silicon Valley together. These are two gargantuan crown jewels of California, of America, that haven't really come together, and we've actually designed a business model to bring them together. So it's really significant that we're doing this today, signaling our outreach to the technology community that we're really here where we mean business, and we believe there's an opportunity to bring these two industries together.
And this is not public yet, but in January, Peter and I will be doing a live event here in Palo Alto at the Hanna House, where we'll be talking about that conversation between Silicon Valley and Hollywood. And we expect that we'll also take it on the road, because there's a Hanna House in Newport Beach in Southern California, and I will be in Southern California during Super Bowl week in 2022. So look for our event with Peter and I, and maybe Sam, you can join the LA event as well, coming to a theater near you soon.
Happy to.
I do want to thank everyone for being a part of this very special live edition of the Chris Yeh podcast. Again, I cannot thank you enough, Peter, Sam, everyone in the audience. Thank you for being a part of this. Thank you for listening. And please do subscribe and tell a friend.